Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Jeff Marsh, who's serving as our worship associate, and the convener of our Green Sanctuary team, Mary Lou Holly, along with our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Peace Choir.
Today, as we light our chalice, let us remember and honor Passover. And may Passover remind us of the courage and strength of those seeking freedom in the past and the many today who are seeking that same freedom.
When the people call earth mother, they take with love, and with love give back, so that all may live. When the people call earth it, they use her, consume her strength, then the people die. Already the sun is hot, out of season. Our mother's breast is going dry. She is taking all green into her heart and will not turn back until we call her by her name.
Good morning on this Earth's, I was going to say birthday, every day should be the Earth's birthday. A time for all ages, living our seventh principle, stewards of Earth's biosphere. What is our seventh principle? What is a steward, and how can we be one? What is the biosphere? We're going to go on a journey to find out, and we're going with the help of these explorers, of three explorers that you'll see in front here. We have an artist and a poet and a scientist, so that's pretty good company to take on our exploration. Joyce Sidman, Becky Prang, and E.O. Wilson. At the end of our journey, you will have the opportunity to join the Earth Stewardship Club. It is sort of like the Clean Plate Club, where you eat all your food on your plate, only this club is making sure that there is food to eat as well as the plate. Clubs have shared goals and values and common experiences and understandings. So to build this, let's all climb in to the TARDIS. For those of you who don't know what the TARDIS is, what is the TARDIS? What is it? It is. We're borrowing this from Doctor Who. It is a phone booth, but it's not a phone booth. This is a time machine. So climb in, and we're going to explore. All right, to explore the biosphere together, we need to travel back very, 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 very long. Very long ago. Very long ago. So hold on. The TARDIS has gone through a lot of time. All right. Wow. 13.8 billion years ago, we hear the story of a Big Bang. Then, 4.6 billion years ago, planet Earth. And if you look here, you can't see, but this is planet Earth. And it is, as we'll see on the next slide, it is very, well, as we see. Yes, go ahead to the next slide. We're gonna go through time from up here all the way to the opposite end to the bottom where there's a little green blob. But it starts out a really red blob, as you can see here, the molten Earth. So the molten Earth starts to cool. It's very, very hot. And it starts to cool. And 3.8 billion years ago, bacteria is first. The first life comes to the planet. Then, a long, long time we have to go ahead, 500 million years ago, we have mollusks. Now, how could mollusks live through all of the things that are happening to the planet? Well, they have very strong shells. And you can just see a tiny little guy over there peeking out that is making this shell. And we have these mollusks today, so they've been around a long, long time. Then 400 million years ago, we have lichen. And lichen is a combination, a working together of fungi and algae. And that's my favorite one, by the way, the combination and the colors. 375 million years ago, look over there, there's sharks. And they look much like they did 375 million years ago. Then we keep traveling and we find 265 million years ago, we have beetles. How did they survive? They have very strong wings that become shields, so they are protected as well. Now, 190 million years ago, we have diatoms. And these are tiny, tiny, tiny in the oceans, in the seas. And they actually feed the whales as well as all other life in the sea. So very, very important to us. Now we're going to pick up a little speed here. 160 million years ago, we have geckos. Now, what do we know about geckos? Because we're in a hurry, I'll tell you. One of the things is that they don't have anything that covers their eyes like we do when we blink. So their tongue comes out and washes their eyeballs. And they have marvelous little pads on their hands. So we are studying them today to find out how we can be more like geckos in some ways. Then we come to 140 million years ago to ants, another marvelous part of the Earth, who work together. Then 65 million years ago, grasses, corn, all of these different forms of grasses. 65 million years they've been on the Earth. That's a pretty long time. Then the next fellow we'll see are squirrels, 36 million years ago. Crows, relatives that we see on the ground today, have been around for 20 million years. Then 5 million years ago, one of my favoriteest plants are dandelions. Imagine that, 5 million years ago. After the dandelions came Lucy, and we didn't put her in here because she's not still living, but she was our first bipedal relative, the Australopithecus, who walked the Earth 3.2 million years ago. Then, 2.3 million years ago, coyotes. And then, only 100,000 years ago. Remember, we started at 13.8 billion years ago with the bang, and here we are 100,000 years ago, not very long ago. We have humans. But the footprint of humans is huge compared to how long we've been here. We've been here this long, and yet our footprint is very, very large. All of Earth's survivors, and that's who we've seen on our TARDIS exploration, all of these fellows have left their mark on the Earth, but none of them in ways that we have on the biosphere. All right, now, let's get back to the biosphere. What is it? The biosphere is the collectivity of all the organisms on the planet at any given moment in time. It's all the plants, animals, algae, fungi, microbes alive as you hear this sentence. The upper boundary of the stratosphere consists of bacteria swept upward by storms to 10,000 meters, which is about 6 to 7 miles and higher, comprising 20% of the microscopic particles found at this altitude. Some of the bacterial species are believed to recycle materials and reproduce by photosynthesis and scavenging dead organic matter. The lower boundary, under the sea and land, of life exists along the lower edge of what scientists call the deep biosphere. There, at more than 3 kilometers, about 2 miles, below the surface, bacteria and nematodes that are roundworms survive intense heat coming up from the Earth's magma, and they live on energy and materials drawn from the rocks around them. Sort of sounds like an ecosystem, doesn't it? The biosphere, compared to the immense bulk of the planet, is very, very razor thin. It's very small, and its weight is negligible. And as we know, especially here today, all things are connected. We can see and learn from nature's survivors. We can learn from the lichen who work together, the sharks, the ants, and all the creatures with whom we share the earth. But we can also learn from our immediate ancestors. In 1771, for example, Joseph Priestley discovered that we depend on air and on plants for our air, for our very breath. Without plants, there is no life. 2 years later, Priestley founded the first Unitarian Church in England. Then, in 1799, Alexander von Humboldt discovered the interdependent web of life. He was climbing up a mountain, and he looked back down, and all of a sudden he saw the land that he had just come up through, and he saw the web. He saw how each thing was connected. And that is the base of our seventh principle, the interdependent web of life. What can we do to shrink our human footprint? First, let's get out of the TARDIS and come back to April 24th, today here. We together individually are already doing many things, but there's many more that we need to do. So, I mentioned earlier, how can we join Earth Stewardship Club? It's really, really easy. Look in your service today, and you're going to find a foot. And there are two things that you need to think about when you look at your foot. It's a very large one, isn't it? We want to find out how we can shrink it. On the front, what we want you to do is think, what can I do to lessen my footprint? And you can draw it or write it, and you don't need to do this now. You can do it later, and we'll have something for you to write downstairs over the next couple of weeks of what you would like to do. So that's on the front, underneath your foot. And then if you turn it over, the question is, what can we as a congregation, as a community, what can we do to decrease our footprint? Then you'll go down to Fessenden Hall one of these days and jot down what some of the things are that you are going to do. All right, we're out of our TARDIS, we're back here, and we're ready to sing the children out.
The Earth, one planet, round, global, so that when you trace its shape with your finger, you end up where you started. It's one, it's whole. All the dotted lines we draw on our maps of this globe are just that, dotted lines. They smear easily. Oceans can be crossed. Even the desert can be crossed. The grain that grows on one side of the border tastes just as good as the grain on the other side. Moreover, bread made from rice is just as nourishing to body and spirit as bread made from corn or spelt or teff or wheat or barley. There is no superior land, no chosen site, no divine destiny falling on any one nation who draws those dotted lines just so. There is only one earth we all share. We, the living, with all else that lives and does not live. Everything, everything, for good or ill, is part of the shared whole. Sky, earth, song, words, and now this silence.
A prayer of confession, a prayer of sorrow. It's responsive, and your response to each stanza of the prayer is the words, "We have forgotten who we are." We have forgotten who we are. We have alienated ourselves from the unfolding of the cosmos. We've become estranged from the movements of the earth. We've turned our backs on the cycles of life. We have forgotten who we are. We have sought only our own security. We have exploited simply for our own ends. We have distorted our knowledge and abused our power. We have forgotten who we are. Now the land is barren, and the waters are poisoned, and the air is polluted. We have forgotten who we are. Now the forests are dying, and the creatures are disappearing, and the humans are despairing. We have forgotten who we are. We ask forgiveness. We ask for the gift of remembering. We ask for the strength to change. Amen.
If all the world were peaceful now and forevermore, peaceful at the surface and peaceful at the core. All the joy within my heart would be so free to soar, and we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are, and we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. If all the world knew justice now and forevermore, justice at the surface and justice at the core, all the war within my heart would be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are, and we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. If all the world knew freedom now and forevermore, freedom at the surface and freedom at the core, all the joy within my heart could be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. If all the world were peaceful now and forevermore, peaceful at the surface and peaceful at the core, all the joy within my heart be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star.
A couple of weeks ago, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, visiting with my family, and we went to the Phoenix Zoo. My son, who's 2.5, is devoted to learning everything he can about animals. He loves them all, and he never tires of playing. In fact, I left a sheep at my house this morning when I came to church. He never tires of being animals and playing with stuffed animals and animal figurines and reading books about them and going to see them. His first words when he was a baby were animal noises, and now I would say that the names of animals account for a sizable percentage of his vocabulary. The Phoenix Zoo is too big for even a wildly enthusiastic toddler to see in one day, so he actually took 2 trips. It's a bit strange for me to spend as much time at zoos as I do these days, because I used to hate them when I was a child. I detested zoos. I became a vegetarian when I was 12. I would have become one when I was 5 if my mother had let me. And I just had this heart for animals, and I felt every time I went to a zoo as a child that the animals were being exploited, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But it seems like a lot has changed with zoos since I was a child, with most reputable zoos now playing an important role in education and conservation efforts. I thought about this in the Phoenix Zoo as we hung out for a long time in front of the rhinoceros. Each of the world's 5 rhino species is vulnerable, and 3 of them are critically endangered, which means that they're at risk of becoming extinct. Many other magnificent animals are on the cusp of extinction, including the South China tiger, and the Sumatran elephant, and the mountain gorilla, just to name a few. And there's no denying that human activity has put these animals at risk. Most scientists agree that destruction of native habitats, hunting, trading in animal parts, pollution, and climate change are the major threats to so many of the world's endangered animals. And we all know this intellectually, but it can be hard for us to truly accept the spiritual and emotional weight, and to make the spiritual and emotional connections it takes to realize and to accept that we are a part of the problem. It's emotionally and spiritually challenging to sit with the truth that we're causing harm for the creatures of the earth. I experienced this in myself yet again just the other day when a friend of mine sent me an article from a National Geographic about 13 sperm whales that were recently beached on the coast of Germany. Scientists conducted autopsies on those whales in order to try to understand what had caused them to become beached. And they found large amounts of plastic trash in the stomachs of several of those whales. Researchers think that the bucket and the fishing net and the plastic car parts that the whales consumed didn't directly cause the stranding, but it may have been one of the factors affecting their functioning, along with oceanic noise pollution and the effects of climate change on water temperatures. When I first read this National Geographic story, I didn't want to know it. It's heartbreaking to know the degree of harm that human activity causes upon our fellow creatures. However, I believe that in order to move toward healing, we have to first be willing to tell the truth. We have to be willing to tell the truth to ourselves and to each other. The Earth and her creatures are in peril, and human behavior is a very, very large part of the problem. The Earth and her creatures are suffering, and in large part, we are the cause of the suffering. I believe that lamentation and praise are both honest and grounded responses to this terrible truth. Lamentation, in words and rituals and songs, allows us the opportunity to confess and to grieve. And as we lament all that has been damaged, as we lament, at the very same time, we open our hearts wider and we open our minds more fully to all that remains wondrous and glorious and wild. For the beauty of the earth and her creatures and for her resilience, we must also speak words and perform rituals and create prayers and sing songs of thanksgiving and praise, because lamentation and praise go hand in hand. The 19th century Lebanese-American poet Khalil Gibran described it well in his writing on joy and sorrow. He says, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked, and the selfsame well from which your laughter arises was oftentimes filled with your tears." And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is it not the cup that holds your wine, the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is bringing you joy. And when you're sorrowful, look again in your heart and you shall see in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight.
Earlier today, we got on a traveling machine and went away. Now we're coming back, very much coming back, to our own spot of the earth to care for, conjuring butterflies and friends in our church garden. We'll be traveling into today, but into the future. To prepare for this multisensory exploration, we would like the person sitting at the end of the aisle and the people in the back sitting in the center to reach under the pews and pull out a plate. You will need to share with the people in your row when the time in the meditation comes to touch, taste, and smell. All right, if you just take a nice breath, enable your lungs to have the sweetness of the air we breathe. Just inhale. And then relax and let every bit of tension leave. You may want to have your eyes closed for this. Imagine walking out the back door of the church on a fine spring day. Look ahead and slightly to your right, and there is the children's garden. As we wander toward it, we find that it is more than a landscape. It's a playscape. Listen, we are not alone. Is that the sound of a hummingbird? Thank you. look over to the left. There's a tunnel and a child inside singing. And oh, see those secret places to sit and explore the touchable, edible plants? No wonder they call permaculture a food forest. Look, blueberries. Pop one in your mouth. Savor the fruit of the earth in our very home soil. Ah, and over to the left, is that a wall to climb? Savoring our blueberries. Look, there's an extraordinary native plant climbing the wall. See the tiny blue and yellow flowers? What could it be? A mystery plant. It tastes sort of like our blueberry, just looking at it. There's so much to explore here. A mud kitchen, chimes, and the wind through the hazelnut tree. We'll come back here another day to taste different plants as the garden changes. Let's wander over to that quiet space. Over there, south, between the church and the fellowship hall. Why, this is the memorial, the meditation garden, where we can take a few moments to listen to our own hearts and enjoy this sacred space, honoring our ancestors and friends who are with us now in our memories. Ah, the smell of lavender. Take your lavender and crush it a little in your hand. And then smell and feel that lavender. Feel the peace of lavender. And then notice the green, the comfort of green with splashes of color. Splashes of color that touch the heart and soul, where spirits linger and refresh. Come to be at peace with life and death. To pause and savor. Set aside a noisy, burdened world. Let the inside of our bodies meet with the outside and find a quiet space where the roaming soul finds stillness and rebirth in moments of pure and simple presence. Feel the warm, weathered wooden bench made from a tree that lived here many decades ago, that holds us safely and lovingly here at this moment in time, where the sights and sounds and miracles of life and death and memory coalesce. Refreshed, let's make our way south a few steps, then a few more steps west, into the beautiful new Hobbs Fellowship Hall. Turning right when we get inside, we find ourselves in a big room where the natural light in the north draws us to the earth and to the patio and rain gardens that call us back to nature. Listen, while we've been inside, a spring rain blessed the flowers. Is that the sound of rainwater we are capturing from the roof and filtering for the gardens and slowing its flow to the river? Yes. Ah, good fortune. The sun is coming out as we wander off the beautiful permeable surfaced patio into the rain gardens. Listen, the creatures of moisture, some of whom live in the land and water, are spreading the word that we are coming. We heard the frogs and crickets. Such diversity of plants, plants who love water, frogs and so many more creatures, birds and insects, and every size of colorful sunflowers. Every texture, smooth, thin and thick leaves, spiky fragrances. Ah, the benches too, facing the garden and the sundial. There's so much to experience here in the rain garden. We'll have to return another day, because now the pollinator garden is calling. What a buzz. The closer we get to the gardens, the louder the sound of bees. Look at the flowers. The bees, the colors, the butterflies. And there, next to Mantoway Street, the most congruent sign, Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent, welcome all. Right in the middle of the rain garden is the pollinator garden, inviting all passersby in cars and on foot into a green and growing rainbow-colored sanctuary, a beacon in the city, splashes of color and fragrance, texture and taste, the interdependent web of life, cycles through the season, ecology where butterflies hatch and drink the nectar of the gods, flowers, and in turn spread pollen, assisted by the birds and insects and us, where crickets crick and join the symphony of feet that walk by, cars that slow their speed and look with curious eyes at this urban nature preserve and forest restaurant ecology for some of Earth's native creatures and flora, living in harmony right in our backyard. Take this all in. Now slowly stretch and breathe in the warm sun and air, the fragrant smells and sounds of this vibrant garden. Hold your breath for just a moment and let the warm glow of life in the garden stream through your body, gladdening every cell. Now we will sit for a few moments and enjoy some images of the gardens, now that we have our own internal creative images. The gardens we explored today are in the future, and until then, we invite you to take the sunflower seeds on the trays and plant them wherever you please, perhaps in a public space next to a carrot or pea, a street lamp, or a magnolia tree, where you can observe the cycle of life of which they and we are a part. There will be much for us all to do as part of the creating and growing of our ideas and our dreams of our gardens. We invite you to take a look and contribute to ideas on the Green Sanctuary board and the whiteboard in Fessenden Hall, and to speak with any of the Green Sanctuary team, including the Building Expansion Team Site Planning Committee, who are planning the gardens. And you'll see them, their names at the end.
To be a Unitarian Universalist, it is not sufficient simply to believe things quietly in our own hearts and minds. To be a Unitarian Universalist, we must look for ways to bring our lives into alignment with our values. The seventh principle calls us to respond in ways that allow us to demonstrate our respect for the interdependent web of all existence. Respect begins in our hearts and minds, but respect isn't simply a belief. Respect requires embodiment to communicate. We express respect in the ways that we talk and the things that we do. For respect to communicate, it has to be lived in some way. And so the question for us this Sunday after Earth Day: how are you demonstrating respect for the interdependent web of existence in your own life? And how are we demonstrating respect as a community? I want to seriously encourage you to consider these questions and to find someone to have conversation with you about them, maybe over pancakes after church or with your family at dinner. How are you demonstrating respect for the interdependent web of existence? There is no one right answer. You don't have to be a vegan who drives a Prius when you aren't biking to work as an eco-activist in order to demonstrate your commitment to the earth. I'm not advocating ecological purity because, in fact, I think it isn't possible. I'm encouraging all of us, myself included, to take some time to think about how we are demonstrating our respect by tending our little place in which we live. For as long as we're living, there's room for us to grow. And just as we can grow wiser and healthier and more spiritually centered, we can grow more ecologically literate and environmentally conscious. And the growing consciousness can be expressed personally, politically, spiritually, creatively, and in so many other ways. There is no one right way. There are many ways to move toward greater alignment between our lives and our values. So let us move, friends, beginning with ourselves as we are, filled with all our hopes and dreams and imagining about who we might yet be on this living planet, and take at least one small step to move closer to our vision. Beginning now with a prayer of healing, your response to each stanza of the prayer, we join with the earth and with each other. We join with the earth and with each other to bring new life to the land, to restore the waters, to refresh the air. To renew the forest, to care for the plants, to protect the creatures. To celebrate the seas, rejoice in the sunlight, and sing the song of the stars. To recall our destiny, renew our spirits, reinvigorate our bodies. To create human community, to promote justice and peace, to remember our children. We join together as many and diverse expressions of one loving mystery for the healing of the earth and renewal of all life. Amen, and may it be so. Will the ushers please come forward? Once each month, we take a special collection for an organization whose work we would like to support. And our special collection today is for the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, which is partnering with indigenous groups in Ecuador to respond to the devastation caused by the major earthquake that took so many lives there recently. All of your undesignated offering will go to help restore life for those who have been affected by this terrible tragedy. The offering will now be gratefully received.
Spring has now unwrapped the flowers. Day is fast reviving. Life is all her growing powers. Towards the light is striving. Gone the iron touch of cold, winter time and frost time. Seedlings working through the mold now make up for lost time. Herb and plant that winter long slumbered at their leisure, now be stirring, green and strong, finding growth their pleasure. All the world with beauty fills, golden green enhancing. Flowers make me among the hills and set the meadows dancing. Earth puts on her dress of glee, flowers and grasses hide her. We go forth in charity, brothers all beside her. For as we this glory see in the awakening season, reason learns the heart's decrees, and hearts are led by reason. Through each wonder of their days, God herself expresses. Beauty follows all her ways as the world she blesses. So as she renews the earth, artist without rival, in the grace of glad new birth, we must seek revival.
Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace of the shining stars to you. Deep peace of the infinite peace to you. Go in peace.